Hey, have you been wondering how the new tax changes will affect you this year? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today will help you figure all that out. Mary Mellum back with us from Green Bay. She is director, co-owner of Ashwaubenon and Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, have been in the tax business for over 30 years, serving individuals, consulting to tax professionals, and they teach tax seminars around the country. So they do a lot of work and can help with the confusion, perhaps, that exists over some of the new tax regulations. So, questions about how the new rules will affect your return? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mary Mellum, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. It's nice to be here.
Oh, it's so wonderful to have you come by. With all these changes this year, does it make sense to hire a professional or get software to help you prepare this year?
Oh, I think that's a big yes. and here's a little bit of the news behind it. The tax bill commissioned the IRS to create a simpler tax form, a postcard form, and they did. Except it takes six pieces of paper behind the postcard to do what the two pieces that we had before did. So people think things are easier. There's no itemizing in some people's minds, which is not a true assessment. And so some people may think, oh, I can do this myself. And maybe you can, but it depends on the value of your time. It's certainly, I think in my mind, better to see a professional. Of course, I'm biased. But there are so many changes, and the forms changed, and to make sure that you're doing the best for yourself, I advise you to do it that way.
How do you think if you take the new codes, and then you've got the partial government shutdown, you wonder how that's going to affect returns?
Well, the government is projecting that they will start accepting returns on January 28th. And there are people at the IRS. It's an essential service. To collect government money is definitely essential. But if you're calling probably to discuss a problem, an IRS letter, I don't think that there will be as many people available for that. I think that there are people there keeping the computers running and accepting returns the way that they have. The refunds may not get out as quickly as they have in the past. That's certainly something to look at. But IRS is also concerned that people may not get the refunds that they were expecting because of the money that they got earlier in the year. So if your withholding went down and nothing else changed, you may not be getting the refund that you thought you were going to get.
Oh.
Because you got the money during the year. And I think that's going to be something that's going to be hard for people to take a look at. How come I didn't get what I got last year? The reality is you're getting the same dollars. It's just that you got some of it during the year. And it's easy to forget about that check that was a little bit bigger than it used to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned early on in our discussion, you mentioned some people may think that they're never going to itemize anymore, but there are apparently some things, even if you're not going to.
Well, part of the issue is the standard deduction now, the general two standard deductions that we think about, the married joint, which is $24,000, and the single, which is $12,000. Those are two big numbers, and if you're not able to get over those numbers, you wouldn't itemize for federal purposes. But Wisconsin does its own thing. They have an itemized deduction credit that plays off of certain itemized deductions, which you may qualify for because they don't run on the same exact numbers that the federal does.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't bring in the things necessary, you may be cheating yourself out of the state itemized deduction.
What are there some off the top of your head that the state recognizes but the federal doesn't?
The state itemizes, uses the same itemized deductions, but uses less of them. So medical is allowed for federal and state. The state taxes are not allowed for the state, but you need the property tax on your principal residence to get the state rent property tax credit. And then the mortgage interest is allowed for federal or for state and federal both, and also charitable contributions. The state doesn't recognize miscellaneous 2%, but now the federal doesn't either, so they're consistent with that.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Let's take some calls. Harry in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi, Harry. What's on your mind?
Hi. Larry and your guest, I'm a retired citizen. I was retired last year, last tax year, 2017, and obviously this year. I have no income other than Social Security, and my retirement fund. And I'm wondering if what I'm going to do is I'm going to prepare my taxes using the 2017 1040 form, and I'm going to prepare them using the 2018 form and see what the difference is. If there is any difference in the tax that I pay on the upside, in other words, if I'm paying more taxes, can your guest recommend what I should do to make that, to publicize that? Because we're supposed to be getting a break in the middle class.
Okay. First of all, the tax rates have gone down. What was the 15% rate is a 12% rate now. So there are tax breaks. There's a very small group of people or group of tax rates that actually go up. But they're between the 24% and the 28% tax rate in that area more. So if you have Social Security and a pension, and that's it, I suspect your tax rate is going to go down by at least 3%. The standard deduction is certainly an increase over what it was, but you have to be careful of the increase versus the loss of the personal exemptions. So again, depending on where your income is, you should see lower taxes, but the lower tax, the tax number is what you've got to look at, because if your tax numbers are different but your withholding is substantially less, if you're looking at the end result, I had to pay in last year or I got this much refund and I'm not getting that much refund this year, you're not comparing apples to apples. So when you're looking at that, be sure you compare the tax due last year, the total tax, to the total tax due this year before the things you're subtracting, like your withholding.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Thank you, Harry. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Elaine emailed to say she went to irs.gov and wanted to look at QCD information for her IRA account. What came up first was individual retirement arrangement and not individual retirement account. Is there a difference there? What's the difference there? Arrangement versus account. It may be the same thing.
I would say it's the same thing. I can't think of individual retirement arrangement with any other connotation but the IRA. The QCD is a really good topic, and she should have found some information on it at irs.gov, but it's probably a good thing to talk about now.
Sure. Let's talk about what is QCD then?
QCD is Qualified Charitable Distribution. What it allows is a person who is age 70 and a half or older, who is has required minimum distributions from their IRAs. They are able to directly transfer that money that would have come out to them to a charitable organization. And what the point of it is that it would satisfy your minimum required distribution, the money that went to the charity, and you would not be paying taxes on it. Now, the offset to that is that if you're not paying taxes on something that went to charity, you're not going to get a charitable deduction for that amount. But what is wonderful about it this year is that if someone does the QCD, and they would have had to have done it by the end of the year, anyone who does it now would be doing it for the 2019 tax year. But if they were able to do this, they may not have enough to itemize their deductions for federal purposes, and this way they kind of get their cake and eat it too. They do not have to pick up that income that's directly transferred to the charity, and they get the full standard deduction. So it's an excellent way for people that are age 70 and a half or older to capitalize on the ability to get both sides of it.
Yeah, that makes good sense, assuming that you can afford to live without the that amount of money for your just sort of personal living expenses.
Well, what you're doing, Larry, is taking the money that you would have given to charity after you got your check, and instead of waiting till after you got your check, you do it beforehand.
Yeah.
It's the same dollars. It's just the timing of it.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Let's take another call. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Gene in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Larry, and your guest. I have a question about having enough enough taxes paid in to keep you protected from a penalty. Now, I understand that you need to have at least 90% of your taxes paid in, or else you might owe a penalty in interest. And up until now, and I'm not sure if this has changed, and this is my question, if you paid in at least the amount of your prior year's tax that always protected you from a penalty, is that still the case?
Yes. The prior year tax, and when you said the 90%, the rule really says 90% of the current year's taxes or 100% of the prior year tax, unless you're in a high income, and then it has to be 115% of the prior year's taxes. And that level is a little bit higher, you know, it's over $100,000 before you have to worry about that part, the 115. But the rule is exactly the same with the new tax changes as it has been in the past.
Interesting. Gene, does that help?
That's exactly what I needed to know. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals and are enrolled agents. Great to have her with us once again. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Dave Poltratz, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your taxes today, there have been lots of changes in the tax laws. And Mary Mellum, a tax professional from Green Bay. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. They're enrolled agents. Always great to have her come by and talk about taxes. This is a kind of a good time of the year to do it. I mean, it's the beginning of the year. Now's the time you ought to be probably doing some planning so that by the end of the year, you're going to get the maximum benefits that you can get in terms of your taxes. So great to have her along. Again, you can join us at 1-800 642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Mary in Edgar, Wisconsin. It's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I need to know if I have to file taxes, that my only income is Social Security and a minimum distribution from my IRA.
The filing requirement is if you're in, and are you single, Mary?
Yes.
Okay. If your minimum distribution is under $12,000, there is no problem that you would have to file an income tax. If it's over $12,000, the standard deduction actually for you is a little bit more than $12,000 because you get an extra standard deduction if you're over 65 added on to that $12,000. And depending on how high your minimum distribution is, it could trigger some of your Social Security to be taxable. But if you're under about $35,000 when you add the two together, the Social Security is probably not taxable. So I hope that helps you with general numbers without knowing the specifics.
Yeah, does that help, Mary?
Yes, so then I don't have to file at all?
If you are not over that number, you have no requirement to file, and the only reason you might want to file is if you had withholding taxes taken out of your minimum distribution, you'd certainly want to get that back. But that's easy to avoid in the coming years by asking them not to withhold any taxes from your RMD.
Oh, that makes sense. Mary, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments for our guest, Mary Mellum. What about health care? Is there a penalty for not having insurance?
That's a great question, Larry. When I teach the seminars, one of the first questions I ask is, are your clients going to be surprised when you ask them this year, do you have health insurance? The reason I say that is because the tax law did address the requirement to have health insurance, but the penalty for not having health insurance goes to zero starting 1-1 of 2019. So for 2018, the penalty for not having health insurance still exists in the same way that it did in the prior year.
So there may, if you didn't have health insurance, there could be a penalty. But
yeah,
there would be a penalty, probably.
There would be a penalty. There are exceptions to get you out of the penalty. And this year, the government made it easier with what's called the hardship exception. The hardship exception is able to be taken right on the tax return through a special code G that you would put on the proper form for certain hardships that exist. And in prior years, hardships existed, but you had to apply to healthcare.gov to get a special number to put on the tax return. So it's a little bit easier if you happen to fall into the hardship categories.
What about medical, as long as we're on medical, what about medical expense deductions? Have those amounts and so forth changed at all?
The medical deductions, what constitutes medical deductions, are pretty much the same as they've been. And this year is really no different than last year because you were able to deduct your medical expenses that exceeded 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. Now, the tax law addressed that and reduced what should have been 10% starting in 2017 down to 7.5% for 17 and 18, but 2019 it will go up back up to 10% of your adjusted gross income. So anything over that goes to your Schedule A, and then you look to see if you can get over the 12 or the 24,000 with all of your itemized deductions.
You know, we have a caller online who has a question that may be a kind of a follow-up to what we've just been talking about. John in Milwaukee, you have a question about medical deductions. John, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, John. What's on your mind?
Yeah. I can no longer, well, I'm over 65, and I can no longer itemize deductions, and that was the case last year. And I thought that any medical expenses that I had would be carried over to the Wisconsin return. And the program that I used online indicated that I could not do that for some reason. And I'm wondering if your guest knows why that would be the case.
Well, the interaction, the medical deductions or medical expenses for Wisconsin purposes play into the Wisconsin itemized deduction credit. And the medical expenses that you have on your federal return carry over to the Wisconsin itemized deductions. The 7.5% that you're allowed to take will carry over to Wisconsin. However, Wisconsin also allows you to take 100% of the insurance that you have paid as a deduction. So Wisconsin does will reduce your medical expenses by the part that you're getting as a deduction before they carry over that number. And when it did that, perhaps there wasn't enough left over after that to give you any benefit from it.
Oh, there.
You're not going to get it. You're not going to double up in two places. Wisconsin will give you a front page deduction for health insurance, which includes your Medicare.
It does include Medicare. Okay.
It does include Medicare.
All right. There we go, John. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Diana in Reedsburg, it's your turn. Hi, Diana.
Hello there. What I was wondering is we're both retired, and we have made out taxes every year till the last couple years. But then somebody said because you have land, you get rent from your land that you have to go and have your taxes made out. The rent that we get pays our taxes, like on our land and stuff. So, and we have no extra IRAs or nothing like that.
So you...
And before when we've made, did our taxes, we've never paid in, never got anything back.
Okay. Your land rental certainly is a taxable event. In the grand scheme of things, with all your income and including the land rent, you have to look at that compared to the filing requirement. So it's not just because you have land that would cause you to file. It's how much rent that it brings in, whether it's going to require you to file.
Okay, so if it's $1,000...
If you're a married couple, it's $24,000 plus an additional amount for age and or blindness that can go there. So if you're a retired couple who are both over 65 and neither of you are blind, 26.6 is the filing requirement. So if your income doesn't exceed that amount, there's no filing requirement, regardless of what kind of income it is, except if it's self-employment type income, then the filing numbers are less.
So you'd add up the Social Security and the rental money that you took in, and if it's over $26,000 and change, you'd have to file?
Kind of. The Social Security is not fully taxable. There is a formula to determine how much of your Social Security is actually included towards the total filing. At most, it would be 85% of the Social Security. It may only be 50%, it may be zero, depending how that rent, land rent. And it's the net land rent. It's the land rent that's collected minus the allowable expenses that go against that. So it's certainly something, depending on how high your land rent is, that you should make sure it's not something you're not doing when you should.
Yeah. Diana, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And Gary in Iron River, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi.
Yes, good morning, folks. I have sort of two kind of combined questions. One, did the changes in the federal tax law have any impact on the Wisconsin taxes we pay? And in particular, for those that get bit by the federal tax change that limits deductions to $10,000, and therefore we lose a significant part of the Wisconsin tax deduction, is there any offset for that in the revised or in the state taxes?
Okay. Number one, the tax changes that were made by federal may or may not impact Wisconsin. The things that you're talking about don't impact Wisconsin because Wisconsin doesn't give you a deduction for the property taxes, or the taxes, withholding or estimated tax payments or property taxes other than your personal residence. So that part of it never impacted Wisconsin. That being said, on the federal side, the taxes for itemized deductions are limited to $10,000. And for some people, that's significant. For other people, it's not. And I guess what I'm saying is, if your income was high enough that alternate minimum tax kicked in, this isn't going to have a big impact on you. If you are not high enough for alternative minimum tax, then the limitation of $10,000 is certainly going to impact you and what you're allowed to deduct, and it may force you to do the standard deduction, and there's no offset on the state to make it better for what the federal has done.
All right. Gary, does that help?
Yep, got it.
All right. Thank you for calling. And Donna in Milwaukee, we turn to you next. Hi, Donna.
Hi, I have a question. I just listened to Mary tell a woman that she didn't need to file taxes if she had a under $35,000 combined income for her RMD and her Social Security.
No, that isn't exactly what I said.
Oh, I thought it was.
No. The combined income number is $24,000 the standard deduction, unless age and blindness brings it up. The $35,000 determines the taxability of the Social Security.
Ah.
So if your income plus half your Social Security exceeds $35,000, that's what makes your Social Security partially taxable. So the two numbers weren't talking about the same thing.
Ah, all right. Donna?
She didn't need to file, and my concern is that if seniors don't file when they make $20,000 combined with their RMD and their Social Security, they would then not be aware of the homestead credit.
And for homestead credit, that is a Wisconsin credit.
Yeah.
And it's a standalone. It is a standalone credit, so you don't have to file a federal return to get the homestead credit. The homestead credit is total income. It includes all of your Social Security and your RMD or whatever income you have, and that number is about $24,009. And let me go back for just a minute. The 35 was not the right number to use. For single people, the range for taxability is $25,000. And it goes up to $35,000 when it gets to the 85% taxable. But for a married joint couple, the Social Security worksheet says if it's under 32 when you take all your income and add it to half your Social Security, it's a $32,000 number.
Ah.
So all those numbers in there. It certainly isn't a bad idea to talk to someone about things, because sometimes people have income that they don't think is taxable that really is, and it never hurts to ask. There are programs, if paying for the service is a problem, the federal government has programs called VITA that are in certain areas, and people, senior citizens especially, can go to those places, bring their information, and they can take a look at it and help them know whether they really have a filing requirement or not.
Oh, excellent. So those are, there are places here in Wisconsin, VITA places in Wisconsin, that where people can go then?
VITA is a volunteer program where people learn to do, they train people to do tax returns. They aren't difficult tax returns, certainly, but these people know what the filing requirement is and what's taxable, and that's certainly, if you're at all confused about whether you need to file or not, see someone so that you can sleep at night and don't worry about not filing when you should.
Donna, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. I want to give Cheryl in Madison a chance to join us. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think you may have answered my question, but just to clarify, I have I'm on Social Security disability. I do some subcontracting on the side to supplement it, and I don't have taxes taken out because I'm a subcontractor. And when I have done my taxes in the past, my SSDI has not been taxable. So I just want to be sure that with the income I'm getting from subcontracting, which is not going over any of the amount that is allowable for SSDI, it's just a little over, I guess, $17,000. So I'm within, I'm keeping within that range.
Okay.
But I just want to be sure I'm doing this right.
Cheryl, you're bringing up a good point, because the subcontracting is what we call Schedule C income. And subcontracting, the reason there isn't withholding taken out of it is because you're your own business. Anytime someone is their own business, they're required to pay Social Security tax, and you pay the self-employment tax through the tax return. And that is going to require you to file a tax return. You may not owe any income tax, but you would have self-employment tax on your $17,000 minus any allowable expenses. So in your case, the $24,000 or the $12,000 is not the number that you have to worry about as far as filing. It is the self-employment income, which is over $400, that causes you to file a tax return. And again, you may not pay any income tax, but you may have to pay self-employment tax.
Cheryl, does that answer your question?
Just a quick question in regards to the amount of, like the subcontracting. If the amount is over $400, did I hear that right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It is over $400. The net after you, what you take in minus your allowable expenses, if that exceeds $400, there is self-employment tax that needs to be paid on that. So you're required to file a tax return even though you may not have to pay any income tax because it's all wiped out by standard deduction.
And what's happened in, you know, like the past 4 years or better. So, okay, so I will definitely be sure to look at it that way and see what happens.
All right, Cheryl.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. And Doug and Saner will go to you next. Hi, Doug.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So for a new business startup, we looked at the tax, here's my deal. I've spent about $40,000 in 18 for new equipment. And now I did not have any revenue incoming because the business is actually starting in 19. But, you know, you have to have equipment and so forth before you can bring in income. And I'm wondering, am I going to be able to deduct any of those business expenses expenses that I had out of pocket for 20. Can I? How is that going to work? And also, we, you know, the wife and I, we looked on the internet to see if we had to have a tax number already, and it looked like it said that we didn't need to have a tax number for a business startup.
Well, you have a number of interesting questions. First of all, if you're starting a business, the allowable depreciation that you're talking about with the equipment that you're purchasing, and by equipment I mean assets that have a life of more than 1 year, if those items that you purchase, there are ways, normally we talk about depreciating those items, there are ways to write them off quicker, but they're contingent on when did you start the business. Now, you mentioned that you didn't collect any revenue until 2019, but that's a tricky, that's not always when you are starting your business, when you collect revenue. It depends on what kind of business you have. So if your business, if you open your door and say, I'm available to do work for you, and you don't get any work in 18, or you don't collect for that work you did in 18 till 19, your business would still be open in 18. In order to deduct any business expenses, you have to have an open door, first of all. And so to tell you whether you're going to be able to deduct the $40,000 or what parts of it, there's not enough information that I can have from you without talking more about it to do that. So, again, I would recommend that you talk to someone, to a professional, with regard to what you're doing to make sure that it's the right time and the best thing for you. And as far as your tax number, if you are a self-employed person, you can use your Social Security number as your ID number. If you go more formal and form an LLC, then you would have to get a tax ID number with that LLC. And certainly if you did a corporation or a partnership, you would need a special tax ID number. So I hope that helps you, but I would strongly recommend that you talk to someone with your particular situation so that you start off on the right foot.
Yeah, makes sense. Doug, thanks. Appreciate the call. Mary Mellum, our guest tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, own Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we talk your taxes with our guest, Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals of Green Bay. Great to have her back, and always appreciate it, the time that she takes to visit with us. Question for her, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's turn next to John in Brown Deer. Hi, John.
Good morning, Larry and Mary, and thank you for accepting my questions.
Sure.
I have two. One is that I downloaded from the Internal Revenue Service my tax forms for 2018, and I didn't see a postcard with six pages of follow-up to be filled in. I just saw the regular tax form that I usually used in the past along with the instruction booklet as I used in the past, and also that's no change. And also from the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, I downloaded a Form 1A in a fill-in form, but I was wondering if Mary knew when Wisconsin is going to download, or if they are going to permit downloading a Form 1 in a fill-in form.
Okay. Let me go and address your question, first of all, about the new tax forms. It isn't the postcard. I'm looking on my computer right now at the 2018 form. And what you got, or what you should have downloaded, is almost a half a piece of paper for page one and a half piece of paper, the bottom half of what you print out is blank? Is that what you saw?
I believe it is.
Okay. That idea is what they call a postcard, because it's a half sheet of paper, and the second piece of paper is the back side of it, if you will. And when you see that, there are, if you look at the page two of it, there are only five kinds of, one, two, three, four, four kinds of income that are included on that page two of that form. And when you look at the next line, it says for the rest of your income, if you don't fit into that small group of income, you have to go to Schedule 1. Now, there are six schedules that go along with that, and when you go to the 1040 and download the 1040, it doesn't give you those schedules. It only gives you those two pieces of paper. But as you read through those lines, if you are not limited to those four kinds of income that are listed there, you have to have the other schedules to bring in the rest of the income from it. So make sure that you look at all of that information. There are truly six new schedules on top of the A, B, C, et cetera, that we've had before. Now, back to the Wisconsin. I do not know when the Wisconsin is ready. I know from a software perspective, Wisconsin, from a professional software, Wisconsin takes a little bit longer to get itself aligned with our federal programs. So for me right now, my Wisconsin program is not ready. So yeah. I can see it, but it's not ready to use yet. So I don't know exactly the date when it'll be available, but I'm not surprised that it's not ready yet.
All right. There we go. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. Jana emailed to say her daughter is 17 years old, made about $6,000 last year, wonders if she needs to file. If no, is it because she didn't make enough or because she's a minor?
Okay. And that's an excellent question. Children have a filing requirement, but it's very often similar to an adult. And the $6,000, if her $6,000 comes from wages, she is under the $12,000 standard deduction that she would get as an individual and would not be required to file. But what happens with children oftentimes is they have withholding on their wages. And if they have state or federal withholding, even though they're under the filing requirement, if they don't file, they leave that money with the government. Now, there is one other thing with kids that I want to mention. There is something called kiddie tax. And kiddie tax is a special tax that is assessed on the earnings, the unearned income of kids. And this is one of the areas for the tax law that has changed from 2017 to 2018. Kiddie tax applies when the unearned income of a child, like interest, dividends, capital gains, sale of stock, things like that, is over $2,100. And as long as that child is generally under the age of 19 or under the age of 24 and a full-time student, generally that kiddie tax means that if their unearned income is higher than the $2,100, there is a special tax that they pay, a higher rate of tax on that. And in the past, it was based on the parents' rate. But this year, it has changed to a different calculation that puts it based on the rate of tax that would apply to an estate or a trust. So for most teens, my answer is simple. You're not required to file, but you should probably check out to see if it's to your benefit to file. But if the few children that have that special unearned income, there's a different tax for them.
And now Jana was the mother here talking about her daughter. Now, if could she claim the daughter since she's 17?
The claiming the child as a dependent has a different set of rules. And we have something that's called a qualified child or qualified children. And it says under if you're under the age of 19 or under the age of 24 and a full-time student for more than 5 months out of the year, and you live with the parent for more than half the year, and the child does not make enough income to pay more than half their support, and they're a U.S. citizen or a national or live in the contiguous, you know, country contiguous to the United States, they fit the definition of a dependent.
All right. We have John in Suring next with a question. Hi, John.
Well, how you doing this morning?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Okay. I rent my uniforms for work, and I have one specific car that I drive back and forth to work. Is that deductible?
Well, John, you just allowed us to talk about something that changed this year. My answer first is no. The reason it's no is because this year, miscellaneous 2% items, which include employee business expenses, are no longer a deduction. So for you, the expense for the rental of uniform and the vehicle that you use for business, there is no place to deduct them anymore.
Now, if do you work as an employee of the company?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
If John were self-employed, those items would remain deductible. But as an employee, employee business expenses, which were part of the miscellaneous 2% itemized deductions on Schedule A, no longer exist. The only thing that could put you whole is if your employer had a reimbursement policy and would reimburse you for the cost of the uniforms or reimburse you your vehicle expenses. Okay. That would be the only way to put you back to where you were last year if you were able to deduct them by itemizing last year.
Yeah, and if you were an independent contractor, you'd be able to do it.
If you're an independent contractor, the things remain the same as they were in the past.
Yeah.
Employee that's treated differently this year.
There you go, John. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Judy in Green Bay. Hi.
I have a question about the qualified charitable distribution. This will be the first year I have money in an IRA, which allows me to do that qualified charitable distribution. It's in a bank CD. And when I questioned the bank about it, they said, well, we'll put that money, whatever you have to take out, your required minimum, we'll put that in your checking account, and then immediately you'll write the checks to the charities. And I said, that really concerns me. I don't think I can even temporarily take possession of that money without owing taxes on it. Can you clarify that, please?
That is exactly correct.
So
the bank would have to be willing to transfer that money directly to the charity. You cannot take it because it would be a distribution to you, and then you would be the one writing the check. The check comes, whether electronic or actual check, comes from the institution that holds your IRA to the charity.
And it shouldn't be all that difficult for the bank to set that up. I wouldn't think, would it? Would you, Mary?
I wouldn't think so, but I'm not aware of any requirement that mandates that the institutions do this. I don't know, and maybe there is, but I'm not aware of it. Most of the IRAs that I've had come into contact with do it, and do it without question. And I haven't even seen dollar amount limitations that say it has to be this much or more before we're willing to do it. I think someday, if it's used as much as I think it could be used, that might come out. But I would certainly, you know, your concerns with the bank are well-founded. And once you take the possession of it, it's no longer a qualified charitable distribution.
Judy, you better get back to your bank, right?
Yes. Well, I've questioned them twice, and this is what they say, so I will question them again.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. We will turn to Jan in Viroqua. Jan, hi.
Hi. I created a bank account in my personal name doing business as, and then a business name. That is the only place the business appears in any formal way on paper. I haven't applied for a wholesale license. I haven't registered with the state. My expenses clearly exceed income, and the question of a loss is irrelevant to my taxes. Does the fact that I have an account doing business as trigger the need to report?
That's a good question, and we will hold on to the answer to that question. Mary, you can consider that as we take a look at the news and so forth. Mary Mellum, our guest. Jan, if you want to stay with us, please do. Mary, a tax professional from Green Bay. She and her husband David operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. We'll have the answer to Jan's question and many more right after this look at the news. Stay with us. We're taking a look at your taxes today for 2018 with our guest, Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals out of Green Bay. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. And callers online, Jan in Viroqua was with us as we broke for news. Mary, did you get the gist of Jan's question?
I did. Jan's question seemed to say that she knows she has a loss because her expenses outweigh her income, and she felt because she had a loss and the loss wasn't going to be enough to do anything with that she didn't have to report. I disagree with the logic. She's taken the money in, whether it's cash or whether it's a deposit into the bank account that she mentioned. It is income. And she needs to prove via the tax return that there is a loss. So she needs to report the income, report the expenses, and even though the loss is there, it may be a loss that helps you in the future in the form of a net operating loss. But yes, she has a requirement to report that income and prove that loss.
All right. Jan, does that help?
Yes, it does. My follow-up question would be, is it legal to simply report the income and just ignore the loss?
No. The reason that isn't, you should be showing everything exactly as it is.
Yeah.
In certain cases, there were court cases years and years ago that showed that if people selectively reported their expenses or didn't, it could create another tax benefit like earned income credit or something like that. So it's best to show what it is and let the chips fall where they may.
There we go. Thank you, Jan. Appreciate the call. And let's turn to Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning. If you've already answered this question, I apologize. It has to do with filing jointly or singly, specifically with regard to our joint income, which consists of Social Security, pensions, and IRA.
Okay. Is it the limitation on filing, or if you're, are you married, first of all?
We are married.
Okay. And for a married couple, your choices are either filing jointly. And we talked about $24,000 being the standard deduction, $26,600 if you're both over 65 and no one is blind. And that would be the filing requirement for joint filers. If you didn't want to file together and wanted to file separately, it would be called married filing separate, and the filing requirements would be exactly half of what that is. And is that what you're asking about, married separate?
And I'm wondering, which is there a lower, less liability.
Is there a benefit?
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, we're in Wisconsin, which is what we call a marital property state. So for a married couple that does not have a marital income agreement in place, it means that you're going to split the income exactly even. It doesn't matter whether it's in your name or your spouse's name. You take all the income, you divide it in two in a marital property state, and each person puts half of it there. And so there's no benefit. There isn't any tax benefit that one is going to be lower than the other because they're going to be the same. If you have a premarital agreement that says my income is mine and your income is yours, possibly if one has more income than the other, you may be able to do something there. But that is pre-planning to do that. It's not an after-the-fact decision that you can make.
All right. There you go, Kurt. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Karen in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a question. I'm going to be starting to take widow's benefits for Social Security. I'm 62. I don't know if they take taxes out for that right away. If they do, can I have it where they don't take taxes out and I pay at the end of the year or what?
That's a good question, Karen. Social Security does not require you to have withholding out of your Social Security benefits. If you want to have withholding taken out, as some people do, then you have to file a separate form. It's, I believe, a W-4P that you would file with Social Security to tell them what you want taken out. But if you do nothing, you'll get your full Social Security payment, and how it affects your tax return at the end will decide how much tax you owe.
Well, there you go. Karen, thank you so much. Does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Mel emailed to ask if a student loan debt forgiveness as a result of total disability, is that taxable in 2018?
That's a very good question. That is one of the new tax laws. Generally, debt cancellation is income unless you have an exception. This year, starting in 2018, the rule for student loan debt forgiveness has been expanded to say that it is not taxable if you receive the cancellation because of total and permanent disability or death.
Okay, so good to go there, although it's an unfortunate situation, obviously.
Yeah.
You'd probably much rather be paying taxes.
yeah.
The mortgage interest deduction, someone else had a question about the mortgage interest deduction changing, and you did talk about it earlier, but it's probably worth repeating.
Yeah, I'm not sure we talked a whole lot about it. Here's the biggest thing for mortgage interest that's going to hit more people than the limitation. There were two things that changed, but the first one is that home equity interest, or money borrowed using the home as collateral to do anything other than buy, build, or substantially renovate the home, is now non-deductible. In English, you can't use your house to pay off your credit cards or buy cars. And in the past, you were able as long as the debt didn't exceed $100,000. Now, you can't at all. And that applies to your existing loans where you've commingled those loans and borrowed some of the money to buy the house or put new windows in and you use the rest of it to do something else with. You're going to need to know how much you can actually deduct. That is acquisition indebtedness, we call it. So you're going to have to split out those old loans as well as not use it in the future and plan to deduct it. And then the second part of it is that instead of having $1 million debt by which you could deduct the interest on $1 million debt, that debt now is reduced to $750,000. And there is a grandfathering rule that comes in that says if your home that you owned in 2017, the debt is $999,000, you're going to be able to deduct all of the interest on that because it's what we call a grandfather debt. But if you purchase a new home in 2019 and it's $1 million home, your interest deduction is limited to the interest on $750,000.
But let's say you purchased, you've got a home and you're making payments on it the last several years and your interest payment for the whole year was, $10,000, let's say, you would be able to deduct that on your taxes.
Yes, as long as your old loan didn't exceed $1 million.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Or the sum of two loans, one from first house and one from vacation home, as long as it didn't exceed $1 million in 2017, you're going to be good in 2018 and future. And if it happens to be $10,000, there is no cap as far as the dollar amount unless it's too high of an interest. But that's not limited in the same way that the taxes are limited to the $10,000. It's limited based on the interest on the total loans for the first and second house. If they existed prior to 2018 or 2018, the $1 million is your cap. If they didn't exist, or if you're adding to a loan, like you buy a second home, the max that you can spend and deduct the interest on it collectively is $750,000.
All right. Let's take another call. Tony in Tomahawk, it's your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Well, this is a lot of fun. can you confirm that the personal exemption is gone now? So a couple, they've lost, $16,000 plus in personal exemption. So the standard deduction, in effect, is not $24,000 now. It's more like $16,000. And the other question, the cap on real estate taxes plus state income taxes is $10,000 now. So I'm just wondering, you think people in Wisconsin are going to be in for quite a surprise this year?
Okay. Let's go to the first one. As far as the personal exemptions, the interaction of the standard deduction and the personal exemption, it's an excellent point because your standard deduction almost doubled. But when you take away the personal exemptions, that doubling isn't as beneficial, and if you have the more family members you have, the less beneficial that is. However, there is a child tax credit that has doubled this year. And so for many of the families with children eligible for the child tax credit, which means children under the age of 17, they're going to go from a $1,000 tax credit up to a $2,000 tax credit. And there is another tax credit that's called the other dependent credit for those that are over the age of 17 and even for any other people that are dependent on your return. Generally, there are some exceptions, for foreign children and things like that. But generally, that person gets $500. So for some people, it's a wash that they're not going to be behind the game. They may even be ahead with the way the new tax bill is. As far as the cap on the real estate taxes, the income and real estate taxes, yes, that's going to hurt some people. It's not going to hurt the people that are paying alternate minimum tax. They're not going to feel the effect of it. That's a little higher income. But the other people, it's going to be a way between how much your itemized deductions were and how much your standard deduction is. The best way to look at this tax bill is everybody's a winner and everybody's a loser. And the how it happens, that spin happens to you, is whether you're going to be ahead of the game or behind it.
Yeah. There you go, Tony. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. Marilyn in Superior, your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I've got a question. A relative of mine took Social Security at 62. Her husband is still working. He plans to work until 70. Now, if she already took it, but when he gets to 70, it's going to go his amount will be raised. Will hers change at when he takes Social Security?
Let me see if I can answer this, Marilyn. I'm not a Social Security expert. It's not exactly the tax, the income tax area, but let me tell you what I know, and if it's contrary to what someone else knows, they can certainly correct it. If you're the older one and you're taking Social Security, you're the one taking Social Security, I believe it's based on your account that she gets. When he retires, I believe that there could be an adjustment to hers if half of his Social Security that he takes at that time is more than what she's currently receiving. I believe that she can get an adjustment to hers at that point in time. That's my understanding.
There you go, Marilyn. Thank you. And Anne in Green Bay, hello.
Hi. I understand from your conversation that I'll need to do a Schedule C on my federal income tax. Because I'm an artist, it isn't a whole lot of money. Is there a limit? I mean, is there a ceiling that I have to pay, or I do the schedule no matter how much I made?
If your gross income is $400 or more, I suggest you do it and show the loss, because there is a trace to money, and you're required to report your worldwide income. And when it comes to Schedule C, even though the 12 and 24,000 that we've been mentioning, it is that self-employment number of $400 that comes into place. So I strongly encourage you, if you are in the business of being an artist, that you do the Schedule C regardless of the dollar amount.
All right. There you go, Ann. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Michael in Green Bay next. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Larry, and guest Mary. I was calling regarding the qualified charitable deduction coming from an RMD, that the individual can take the checks into their possession as long as they're made out to the charity and mail them out themselves.
That is one of the exceptions, but the check has to be made out to the charity. You know, the charity has to be on that check. They can certainly deliver it. It is one of the exceptions. But if that check is made out to them only or deposited into their account and the charity is not included, that ruins it.
Yeah.
So it's a good point to make. It is one of the exceptions.
Yeah. Michael, thank you. Is that the rest of your comment?
Yeah, I just think it's easier to keep track of where it goes if you do it that way. But thank you. Yes, that answers the question.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Harold in Milwaukee emailed to ask, what is the standard deduction over and above the $12,000 for people over the age of 65? Will this make up for the loss of personal exemption?
Okay. It's not going to make up for the loss of the personal exemption. It is, I believe, 26, 60, and 24. So I believe it is $1,600 for the joint filer for the over 65. And I believe it's $900 for the single filer. I might have that number wrong, but that's, the numbers are exactly the same, the adjustments, as they were in, actually, it's 26. 26, because it goes from 24 to 26.60 if you are married filing joint and you both get it. So that would be $1,300 a piece for the single, for each person. So it's kind of the ballpark figure there. And so, no, it's not going to make up for the personal exemption, because the personal exemption that you lost is $4,050 per person.
What is your opinion? There's been a couple of questions relating to this. As far as making the most of your donations, if you double up on your donations 1 year and then just take the standard deduction perhaps the next year?
You know, that's a wonderful method that we've used for years and years. But because of the doubling up, because of the increase in the standard deduction, it's good to do, but you're going to have to do a lot more of it in order to make it happen. Because as a married couple, you've got to get to $24,000 or more if you're depending on your age. And so only 10 of it can come from taxes. And so that says that if you're a married couple, $14,000 is what either has to come from medical or charitable, generally, between the two of those, unless you have a mortgage on your house. So it's a good theory, but it's not going to be as easy to do this year as it has been in the past.
Ah, yeah, that makes some sense.
You've got to look carefully at the numbers to see if it makes sense.
Someone was wondering if that would trigger, if you suddenly had this big increase in, say, your church donations, if that might trigger the IRS taking a closer look at your taxes.
I wouldn't guarantee that. It's always, you know, they always can. But what I tell people is, if you have given the amount to charity and you have kept the documents that you are supposed to, whether they audit you or not, you're okay because you have the support for it. It's just the nuisance of it happening.
There you go. On that happy note, Mary, we'll close for today. I know you're going to be back on February 12th, if I'm not mistaken. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. There's a lot of wonderful questions. You did a wonderful job answering those questions. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Larry.
Look forward to your next visit. Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin, has been in the tax business for more than 30 years. She and her husband, David, operate Schwabenen Tax Professionals. They serve individuals. They consult other tax professionals as well, so they hold tax seminars around the country, so they really know what they're talking about. She'll be back on February 12th to answer more of your questions. Let's take a look at tomorrow. PJ Leash will be back at 11 o'clock tomorrow to talk about the world of insects and those you can find on your indoor plants at this time of the year. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store.